repeat the statement made in the House of Commons today on the publication of the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse Final Report, Lord Sharp of Epsom.
My Lords, with permission, Mr. Speaker, I would like to make a statement about the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse. Last Thursday, the report of the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse was published. It concludes 7 years of investigation into institutional failure across England and Wales to protect and safeguard children from child sexual abuse. I want to thank the Chair of the Inquiry, Professor Alexis Jay, and her whole team for their fearless dedication and commitment in uncovering generations of horrendous societal, professional, and institutional failings. I have written to Professor Jay and want to meet with her in the coming weeks to discuss her findings. Above all, I want to extend my profound gratitude to the thousands of victims and survivors who have come forward to share their testimonies and experiences with the inquiry. It took immense courage, and we will honour that courage by keeping their voices front and centre in everything we do and in overseeing a radical improvement in how this crime is dealt with and prevented. The whole House will be deeply moved by the reasons that victims and survivors gave for wanting to share their story. They wanted their experience to be acknowledged, to be listened to be taken seriously, and to protect other children from suffering as they have suffered. Yet they also wanted to not to be defined by the experience and to their experience, and to find, as one survivor put it, life after abuse. Mr. Speaker, they are heroic. Nothing is more wicked than hurting a child, and there is no worse dereliction of duty than failing to protect a child. The report reveals horrific abuse of children, and it makes for devastating and distressing reading. It finds that organisations have put their reputations ahead of protecting vulnerable children, either turning a blind eye or actively covering up abuse. This is inexcusable. I am a father to three children, and this report has made for very difficult reading. I cannot imagine the pain any victims have been through, and so, Mr. Speaker, I say this on behalf of this government and all governments that came before, to all the victims who have suffered this horrendous abuse, I am truly sorry. The inquiry heard from more than 7,300 victims and survivors. It investigated abuse not only over the last 7 years, but over several decades. The report makes a wide range of recommendations, including greater accountability, increased reporting, better redress for victims, an increased focus on bringing the perpetrators of these abhorrent crimes to justice, acts to justice, and a stronger voice from government on this issue. The government will take all of these recommendations and the insights provided by brave survivors seriously. Getting this right will mean everyone redoubling their efforts and working more closely together. All of government, the police, the health and care system, local authorities, schools, and all other interested parties. I will convene ministers across Whitehall to drive change. Our new Child Protection Ministerial Group, set up following the Care Review, will champion children's safety at every level and provide the leadership to oversee vital reforms across children's social care. Several government departments have been core participants in this inquiry, and we've been working to respond in real time to recommendations already made during the course of the inquiry. The actions we have taken include the government's Tackling Child Sexual Abuse Strategy, published in January last year, driving initiatives to increase reporting of this too often hidden crime, including awareness-raising campaigns, and to improve the confidence and capabilities of frontline professionals to identify and respond to child sexual abuse. Ensuring that education professionals and safeguarding professionals are better equipped and supported in identifying harmful sexual behaviours and protecting children from peer-on-peer abuse and harm. Targeting offenders by investing in the National Crime Agency, GCHQ, new technology, and giving the police stronger powers. And providing better support to victims, committing to a new victims bill, and increased funding for specialised support services. The conclusion of the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse marks the end of a vital period of reflection and learning. It must also mark the start of the next chapter in how society confronts and defeats this evil. Nothing must be allowed to get in the way, be it inertia, misplaced cultural sensitivities, indifference, self-interest, or cowardice from those whose job it is to protect children. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it is the job of every adult to do all they can to protect children. Anything less is a profound moral failing, let alone a professional or institutional failing. Walking by on the other side is never acceptable. Would-be abusers need to know that they will be caught and punished. Victims need to know that it is never their fault and that they will be heard and protected. I've laid a copy of the inquiry's report in Parliament. It is only right that the government will now take time to carefully consider its findings and recommendations in full. We will respond comprehensively and in line with the inquiry's deadline. But let me make a promise now. I will use all available levers to protect our children and right the wrongs exposed by the inquiry's findings. I will do all in my power to improve how law enforcement and the criminal justice system respond to child sexual abuse. I will work with my ministerial colleagues and across party lines to hold organisations to account, bring perpetrators to justice, and support victims and survivors with compassion and total care. And where we can act more quickly, we will. And that is why we have already announced that through the Support for Victims and Survivors of Child Sexual Abuse Fund, we are allocating up to £4.5 million over 3 years to 7 organisations to support victims and survivors. The fund is only the start in addressing the inquiry's recommendations, but another step towards ensuring that we are providing vital support for children and young people who have experienced sexual abuse, adult survivors, and parents and carers of victims. It is also just one part of the more than £60 million a year the Home Office is investing in tackling this crime. Mr. Speaker, child sexual abuse is a terrible but preventable crime, and we must prevent it. We will do so with the recommendations of this inquiry in front of us and the words of heroic survivors ringing in our ears. I commend this statement to the House.
My Lords, I would like to open by thanking the Noble Lord for repeating the statement. I would like to join him in paying tribute to the 7,300 victims and survivors who gave testimony to the inquiry and who have shown great bravery and strength in telling their stories. But there will be many thousands of other victims who did not feel able to come forward, and I hope they too will feel this report is a substantial and serious attempt to understand the extent of institutional failure to protect children over many decades. This report, 7 years in the making, is of immense importance. It offers practical solutions and a solid, rational oversight of a crime which is alternately ignored, or it is sucked into conspiracy theories, which we see through organisations like QAnon. This report shows the true banality of evil, and it is all the more powerful for that. And I'd like to pay tribute to Professor Jay for producing this report. This is a report about one of the worst imaginable crimes, about the sexual abuse and exploitation of children and the institutional cover-ups when the abuse came to light. These institutions were there to protect children, but instead they acted to protect their own institutional reputations. The report raises concerns about current child protection arrangements. Firstly, the report refers to the explosion in online facilitated child sexual abuse, including the grooming and the rape of children and babies. The Home Secretary didn't mention this in his statement, but can the Minister confirm that when the Online Harms Bill will complete its passage in the Commons next week and will be accelerated straight to the House of Lords? And can the Minister also confirm that the National Crime Agency will not have to make the 20% staff cuts which they have been asked to draw up in the recent past? Secondly, the report says, and I quote, "significant reductions in the funding of public services after 2010 is one of the key factors that has had a deleterious impact on the responses to child sexual abuse." Does the Minister accept the damage done by the scale of the cuts on child protection, and what can he say about protecting our existing arrangements in the forthcoming spending review? Third, the report is clear that organisations still don't take child protection seriously enough. What is the Home Office's position on a mandatory duty to report child sexual abuse? The Labour Party has been calling for it since 2014, And it's worth noting that the former Prime Minister, Theresa May, who initiated this report, supported this key recommendation of the report. Fourthly, the report is clear about the failings in the criminal justice system. The charge rate on child sexual abuse has dropped from 32% in 2015 to 12% last year. There are many other examples of failure in the criminal justice system too, but surely child sexual abuse should be the top priority. Fifthly, the Home Office has responsibility for unaccompanied asylum-seeking children. Yet the Independent Inspectorate found just last week that they were being placed into unsuitable hotels where the staff didn't even have DBS checks, and hundreds of children have gone missing. What action has the government taken since the Minister saw those reports over the weekend? My Lords, this report is clear about the systemic failures, past and present, and we too in the Labour Party have been part of that problem. And my Lords, my right honourable friend Yvette Cooper apologised on behalf of the Labour Party for its part in that failure. My Lords, too often there has been a deference to power which has overridden a duty of care. My Lords, I spoke about the banality of evil. Noble Lords will know that I sit as a magistrate in London, and magistrates would not normally deal with these types of offences. But several times in my experience as a magistrate, in family courts, in youth courts, and in adult courts, I've had witnesses and defendants make very serious child sex-related accusations when we were dealing with far lesser charges in the court process. And we as a court system need to be alert to people reaching out for help when they are in the court system. My Lords, we owe it to the thousands of victims and survivors who have spoken out. Two final points, my Lord. The first is a very important point, and that is this is not an historical problem. It's happening today. So my question for the Minister is what is being done to ensure that children know where and how to report abuse? And also to repeat a point which was made by many members in the other place, and that is, can the Minister give an undertaking that there will be regular reports to Parliament about how the government is implementing the recommendations in the report?
My Lords, I thank the Noble Lord the Minister for repeating the statement. This 7-year independent inquiry into child sexual abuse sheds light on extraordinary and appalling institutional failings. I want to thank the Right Honourable Theresa May MP for establishing this inquiry in the first place, to Professor Alexis Jay, the Chair, and her panel, and most of all, the survivors and victims who selflessly came forward because they wanted what happened to them, wanted to prevent it happening to anyone else. My Lords, this is a catalogue of failing to protect children, failing to listen to children, failing to believe children. There must be a change of culture, both in society and in those institutions who put their reputations before protecting children. And we on these benches are also truly sorry. All governments have failed these survivors and victims, along with the police, health and social services, and local authorities. We have all let the victims and survivors of child sexual abuse down, and the physical and emotional damage to these children have suffered have led to a lifetime of suffering. The Home Secretary said that the perpetrators will be caught and prosecuted, and all available levers in his power, including the police and the criminal justice system, will be used to bring offenders to justice. Can I ask the Minister how that is going to be brought about when there is a lack of police resources, where the police are already overstretched, where the Crown Prosecution Service do not have enough lawyers. The proportion of criminal cases overall resulting in prosecution is falling. And there are serious backlogs in the courts. Will the government increase the resources to the criminal justice system, like the resources available to the police and the Crown Prosecution Service? And will the government ask those institutions to prioritise child sexual abuse cases? It is right that we should say sorry to the victims and survivors, but we should also not forget those falsely accused whose lives and reputations were seriously damaged as the police lurched from not doing enough to the opposite extreme. Those making false allegations damage genuine victims as well as those they wrongly accused. Every victim must be protected, cared for, and believed whilst the police engage in an objective search for the truth. Three specific issues. Will the government introduce an effective statutory duty to report child sexual abuse? When it comes to unaccompanied asylum-seeking children, as has already been said, these asylum seekers are being placed in inappropriate accommodation in hotels where those looking after them have not been DBS checked, and more than 100 have gone missing, and in going missing are themselves vulnerable to sexual abuse. In the Home Secretary's statement, he talked about no worse dereliction of duty than not protecting a child. Well, the Home Office has not been protecting these children by allowing them to go missing. So what is the government doing to ensure that this is stopped? And thirdly, on prosecutions, the Home Secretary talked about the number of convictions for possession of indecent images of children increasing by 39%. But can the Minister tell us, what about the number of children being rescued from abuse? The children in those indecent images? What about the prosecution of those producing the images, not just those who are in possession of them? My Lords, there were 2 million pages of evidence, 107 recommendations, and it will take time to fully process and action all those recommendations. But that must not be lost in the current political turmoil. Child sexual exploitation is endemic and increasing, and it's not just a national crisis, but a global one, as the report says. Urgent action is needed to reverse increasing numbers of children being abused. So will the Minister confirm that the government will regularly update the House and not wait until all the recommendations have been addressed?
My Lords, I thank both Noble Lords for a large number of questions. I'll do my very best to get to all of them in the time available. I would like to agree with the Noble Lord, Lord Ponsonby. Of course, there are many thousands of other victims, and we should be thinking about those people who were unable, for whatever reason, to come forward as well. As the Noble Lord Paddock said, there were an enormous number of submissions, and once again, I'd like to commend those who did and their bravery. The Noble Lord Ponsonby asked me about online and the online safety bill. I can't confirm, obviously, that it will be given as expedited progress through this House, but as the Noble Lord noted, it is back in report stage in the other place next week, I believe, and we will be working with DCMS, particularly in light of this report. In terms of cuts to the NCA, I don't know how they're going to be managing their budget. What I can say is the government has committed to a £20 million per annum uplift to that budget, which is going through. Whether that impacts staff numbers and so on, I cannot really say. I apologise for not having that information to hand. As and when we do, I'm sure we'll be able to come back to the House with it. The Noble Lord also asked me to accept damage done by cuts. I'm afraid I'm going to refer back to an answer I gave in a debate on Thursday last. No, the world has changed. I mean, a lot of these crimes have developed as a result of the changes we're just discussing with regards to the online world. So the responses have to change. It would be inappropriate of me to use hindsight to say how the world might have been had things not been done in a different way, given that the world has changed enormously. I can't do that. We're talking about, or a number of questions asked of me about the mandatory duty, and I think the noble Lord Paddock called it the statutory duty. And of course, this is something that is going to be looked at. The government have committed to look at all of the various recommendations that are remaining. I would remind noble lords that there were 107 recommendations made. 87 have been already actioned because they came out before the publication of the final report. The government has committed to look at the remaining 21, I think it's 21, and do something and respond to them all, I should say, within the 6 month period. So that is what we will be doing. As regards mandatory reporting, I understand the arguments for it. The inquiry's report powerfully draws out the systemic failures of institutions to treat child sexual abuse seriously, as both noble lords have noted, and to properly report allegations of child sexual abuse. As I've just said, we are committed to supporting frontline professionals working with children and making sure they feel confident and equipped with the right resources and training to be able to identify and respond to concerns or cases of child sexual abuse. I could go on about this. There is one little caveat I would like to make. The noble lord suggested that the Labour Party was calling for this in 2014. In 2016, there was a consultation on mandatory reporting. I don't know if he remembers that. Evidence was very mixed, actually. There were plenty of principled reasons from high-profile organisations who have a vested interest in this particular subject that weren't necessarily in favour of it. So all of these things have to be considered. I'm very happy to share those statistics with him afterwards, if you would like. Both noble lords asked me about the criminal justice system and the various numbers. Again, there were calls for more money, which obviously I am unable to answer. But I can answer a little bit as regards the numbers of prosecutions and the numbers of offences that are being committed. So combined, and I think my right honourable friend, the Home Secretary, referred to this in his speech, there were 103,496 child offences recorded by the police in the year to March 2022. So a horrific number, and it's a 16% increase from the previous year to March 2021. However, there have been an increase, as the noble Lord Paddock noted, in the number of convictions for contact and indecent image on indecent images. That number has increased by 39%. I mean, it's still a small number, and it's too small, and I, of course, not acknowledge that. I can't say what's been happening to the victims of those particular images. I would like to be able to give him more information, but obviously I will investigate and come back to him if I can. I could go on in terms of the numbers, but frankly, it's pretty horrible, and we should move on, I think. The question was asked to me about unaccompanied asylum seekers. On average, unaccompanied children seeking asylum are moved to long-term care within 15 days of arriving in a hotel. But obviously we know more needs to be done. And that's why we're working closely with local authorities to increase the number of placements available and offer council £6,000 for every child they can provide accommodation for. Any child going missing is obviously extremely serious, and we work around the clock with the police and local authorities to urgently locate them and ensure they're safe. My Lords, there's a lot of work being done already around public awareness, to which the noble Lord Ponsonby referred. Again, I'm sure I'll have an opportunity to go into more detail on precisely what that work is, but he should rest assured it is happening. And as I say, my right honourable friend, the Home Secretary, did commit to action all of the remaining recommendations, or at least come back with considered responses to all the remaining recommendations within the 6 months as mandated by the inquiry. I think I've answered most of the questions. I apologise if I haven't, but I shall leave it there.
The problem is that this is happening today, tonight, tomorrow morning. And of the 107 recommendations, what the government must do is to decide which should have priority. Now, there can be a debate about this, but if I may say so, one which needs urgent attention is legislation to deal with the issue of mandatory reporting. Mm. First question, on whom should such a duty be imposed? Institutions responsible for the care of the children is pretty obvious. individuals in positions of trust. But we also have to be very careful that in the haste we don't impose a duty on victims to report other victims. Mm-hmm. They may find it impossible to report their own story, so why should they be in a position where they have to report somebody else's story? And in some institutions it must be perfectly obvious to victims that there are other victims of the same person. We need to be careful about the legislation. It is not an offence, it's not an offence of obstructing the police for me not to answer a question. It's an offence to lie. If we're going to amend that law, we need to be clear about how we're going to amend it. The Section 44 of the Serious Crimes Act 2007 is almost impossible to understand. I do beg whoever's responsible for the legislation not to simply say, well, we've got a good act about that. It's not a good act. It's very difficult to follow. It's confused in any event because it did not follow the Law Commission's recommendations. So can we legislate urgently to deal with these issues, but can we be careful about how we legislate?
My Lords, I'm sure those of us who sit on this bench, along with all other benefits in your Lordship's house... I'm so sorry.
Sorry, I thought it was me. My Lords, I thank the noble Lord, Lord Judge, for that. A very eloquent explanation of what I just tried perhaps less eloquently to explain to the noble Lord Ponsonby. If I go perhaps back to the previous consultation that was held into this particular subject, I think it also illustrates a little of what Lord Judge just described. So 51%, this is back in 2018 when it reported, but 51% of respondents felt introducing a duty to act would have negative consequences. 68% felt mandatory reporting would have an adverse impact, and 85% felt it would not ensure that appropriate action was taken. This included people like the Children's Commissioner and the NSPCC, so they know what they're talking about. And some of the reasons that were given, and I think these go very much to what the Noble Lord Lord Judge was saying, is it could dissuade victims from disclosing incidents of abuse, reduce safe spaces for children, could have an adverse impact on the child protection system by impacting recruitment and retention of staff, for example. Increased reporting may divert attention from the most serious cases. There are so many other reasons that were quoted. It just illustrates the complexity of this subject and the care with which it needs to be looked at. So I agree entirely with Noble Lord.
My Lords, those of us who sit on this bench, along with all other benefits in your Lordship's house, are deeply saddened and indeed ashamed by the harm and suffering that's been experienced by victims and survivors of abuse. I salute the courage of survivors in coming forward to share their stories. And we're determined to learn from the mistakes of the past and to make the church as safe a place as is possible. Which is why we welcome this final report and are already embracing its various recommendations, such as the Church of England's Redress Board, which has a victims and survivors working group. And in this respect, may I ask the Noble Lord, the Minister, what exactly is the government's intention? Is it His Majesty's government's preference to support institutions, including the church, in the establishment of individual redress schemes? Or is it the government's intention to create a new overarching external regulatory body in this respect?
Well, the Right Reverend Prelate obviously makes some very good points again. So perhaps if I outline what the institutional response to tackling, what the government is doing rather to ensure that all sectors and leaders of society are working together to tackle child sexual abuse. In the opening speech given by the Right Honourable Home Secretary in the other place, I think he outlined very comprehensively the cross-party and multi-agency dimension to all of this. But we are transforming the way local safeguarding agencies work together to ensure a more effective response in safeguarding children. The Children and Social Work Act of 2017 introduced significant reforms requiring local authorities, clinical commissioning groups and chief officers of police to form multi-agency safeguarding partnerships. All of the new partnerships were in place by September 2019, but we do know there are still improvements to be made to the quality and consistency of the local partnerships. We're working with local partners to understand and address those challenges in ensuring effective independent scrutiny, engaging with schools and other relevant agencies, and distribution of funding. But I reiterate, the government is firmly committed to supporting all institutions that play a role in safeguarding children, in developing robust safeguarding strategies that are carefully monitored, ensuring the safety and protection of children regardless of where they live or where they spend their time.
My Lords, I worked with the Right Honourable Member for Maidenhead in setting up this inquiry. And I'd just like to point out that at the time, there were plenty of people who said it shouldn't have been launched. They said it was all in the past. There was no point in raking it all up again. Then they said the terms of reference were too broad and that it would never end. Well, my Lords, I'm pleased to say that they were wrong on all counts. I'd like to congratulate Professor Alexis Jay on her brilliant stewardship of this inquiry and on her hard-hitting report. As she did in Rotherham, she has revealed truths that mean we can never look at society in the same way again. Now, there's too much to say here, but I think just a couple of statistics that haven't been mentioned that were in the report. In any year group of 200 children, it is estimated that 10 boys and more than 30 girls will experience sexual abuse before the age of 16. The number of sexual abuse offences recorded by the police where the victim was a child under the age of 4 has risen by 45% in recent years. So, as other noble lords have said, this is not in the past, it is very much in the present, and it will continue to wreck lives into the future if we don't do something to stop it. Having worked on the Inquiry's Truth Project, I have listened to the accounts of victims and survivors. And whilst everyone's experience is different, the damage is always the same. Families torn apart, lives forced in a different direction, feelings of shame, anger, hurt. We should thank all those who came forward and who did so to ensure that what happened to them doesn't happen to future generations. Thanks to Professor Jay, it doesn't have to. She has given us the answers. As I said, it's a brilliant report, but it can only ever be as good as the action that flows from it. So I would like to say to my noble friend the Minister, I'd like to thank him for the statement, and I think it does reflect the deeper understanding we now have of this issue. But I would ask him to assure the House once more that the government will look quickly and seriously at its recommendations, and that also, just finally, it will ensure that all the relevant departments across government play their part in implementing the recommendations. Because as we saw from the interim report, if they don't work together, we just cannot drive through the change that is very much needed.
Well, I very much thank my noble friend for her remarks. I also commend her for her efforts when she was working with the Right Honourable Member for Maidenhead. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to commend the former Prime Minister for the extraordinary work she has done on this. Those statistics were genuinely appalling, particularly when they're put in those terms. I've read them as percentages where they seem rather dry, perhaps, but to actually give numbers is really rather harrowing. The government, I think, has made it very clear that it is determined to work across agency and across department, and that work will be ongoing. All relevant departments will be involved. And there was something else that the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Home Secretary, said, which I think it bears repeating. When asked about a minister for children, he said, we should all be ministers for children, and I think he's right.
To the House to the issue of mandatory reporting. It's disappointing that recommendation 13 on mandatory reporting is not actually a pure system. It's a bit of a hodgepodge of mandatory reporting systems. So can I ask the Minister, will the government undertake to compare recommendation 13 to successful models of mandatory reporting elsewhere in the world, including Australia, Canada, Denmark, France, Ireland and the USA, and in particular to compare the views of public bodies before it was introduced and after, because in each of those countries there has been a significant gain in confidence in the regulated bodies that have to report.
Well, I very much thank the noble lady for those suggestions, and I will happily take them back to the department and the Home Secretary, and strongly recommend that he investigate.